As far as the housing goes, I've seen it in Minnesota. 12% more houses in Minneapolis. Prices went down on rent 4%. It's working. And then making sure tax cuts go to the middle class. $6,000 child tax credit, we have one in Minnesota, reduces childhood poverty by a third. We save money in the long run, and we do the right thing for families. And then getting businesses off the ground. The law as it stands right now is $5,000 tax credit for small business, increasing that to $50,000. Now, this is a philosophical difference between us. Donald Trump made a promise, and I'll give you this. He kept it. He took folks to Mar-a-Lago, said, you're rich as hell, I'm going to give you a tax cut. He gave the tax cuts that predominantly went to the top class. What happened there was an $8 trillion increase in the national debt, the largest ever. Now he's proposing a 20% consumption or sales tax on everything we bring in. Everyone agrees, including businesses, it would be destabilizing it. It would increase inflation and potentially lead to a recession. Look, this is simple for you. Where are we going? Kamala Harris has said to do the things she wants to do, we'll just ask the wealthiest to pay their fair share. When you do that, our system works best, more people are participating in it, and folks have the things that they need.
Senator, I want to give you a moment to respond on that. But similarly, the Wharton School has done an analysis of the Trump plan and says it would increase the nation's deficit by $5.8 trillion. My question is the same for you. How do you pay for all that without ballooning the deficit? I'll give you 2 minutes.
Well, first of all, you're going to hear a lot from Tim Walz this evening, and you just heard it in the answer. A lot of what Kamala Harris proposes to do, and some of it, I'll be honest with you, it even sounds pretty good. Here's what you won't hear, is that Kamala Harris has already done it. Because she's been the vice president for 3.5 years. She had the opportunity to enact all of these great policies. And what she's actually done instead is drive the cost of food higher by 25%, drive the cost of housing higher by about 60%. Open the American southern border and make middle class life unaffordable for a large number of Americans. If Kamala Harris has such great plans for how to address middle class problems, then she ought to do them now. Not when asking for a promotion, but in the job the American people gave her 3.5 years ago. And the fact that she isn't tells you a lot about how much you can trust her actual plans. Now, Donald Trump's economic plan is not just a plan, but it's also a record. A lot of those same economists attack Donald Trump's plans, and they have PhDs, but they don't have common sense, and they don't have wisdom. Because Donald Trump's economic policies delivered the highest take-home pay in a generation in this country, 1.5% inflation, and to boot, peace and security all over the world. So when people say that Donald Trump's economic plan doesn't make sense, I say, look at the record. He delivered rising take-home pay for American workers. Now, Tim admirably admits that they want to undo the Trump tax cuts. But if you look at what was so different about Donald Trump's tax cuts, even from previous Republican tax cut plans, is that a lot of those resources went to giving more take-home pay to middle-class and working-class Americans. It was passed in 2017, and you saw an American economic boom unlike we've seen in a generation in this country. That is a record that I'm proud to run on, and we're going to get back to that common sense wisdom so that you can afford to live the American dream again. I know a lot of you are struggling. I know a lot of you are worried about paying the bills. It's going to stop when Donald Trump brings back common sense to this country.
Governor, do you want to respond to that? What has Kamala Harris done for the middle class?
Yeah, well, Kamala Harris's day one was Donald Trump's failure on COVID that led to the collapse for our economy. We were already before COVID in a manufacturing recession, but 10 million people out of work, largest percentage since the Great Depression. 9 million jobs closed on that. That was day one, whether it was the Infrastructure Act or other things we moved. Now, you made a question about experts, said this. I've made a note of this. Economists can't be trusted. Science can't be trusted. National security folks can't be trusted. Look, if you're going to be president, you don't have all the answers. Donald Trump believes he does. My pro tip of the day is this. If you need heart surgery, listen to the people at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota, not Donald Trump. And the same thing goes with this. And I ask you out there, teachers, nurses, truck drivers, whatever, how is it fair that you're paying your taxes every year and Donald Trump hasn't paid any federal tax in the last 15 years, and the last year as president? That's what's wrong with the system. There's a way around it, and he's bragged about that. We're just asking for fairness in it, and that's all you want.
You have a minute.
Governor, you say trust the experts. But those same experts for 40 years said that if we shipped our manufacturing base off to China, we'd get cheaper goods. They lied about that. They said if we shipped our industrial base off to other countries, to Mexico and elsewhere, it would make the middle class stronger. They were wrong about that. They were wrong about the idea that if we made America less self-reliant, less productive in our own nation, that it would somehow make us better off, and they were wrong about it. And for the first time in a generation, Donald Trump had the wisdom and the courage to say to that bipartisan consensus, we're not doing it anymore. We're bringing American manufacturing back. We're unleashing American energy. We're going to make more of our own stuff. And this isn't just an economic issue. I mean, I've got three beautiful little kids at home, 7, 4, and 2, and I love them very much, and I hope they're in bed right now. But look, so many of the drugs, the pharmaceuticals that we put in the bodies of our children are manufactured by nations that hate us. This has to stop. And we're not going to stop it by listening to experts. We're going to stop it by listening to common sense wisdom, which is what Donald Trump governed on.
Senator, your time is up. Governor Walz, can you address that? I mean, voters say they trust Donald Trump on the economy more. Why?
Well, if you're listening tonight and you want billionaires to get tax cuts, you heard what the numbers were. Look, I'm a union guy. On this, I'm not a guy who wanted to ship things overseas, but I understand that, look, we produce soybeans and corn. We need to have fair trading partners. That's something that we believe in. I think the thing that most concerns me on this is Donald Trump was the guy who created the largest trade deficit in American history with China. So the rhetoric is good. Much of what the senator said right there, I'm in agreement with him on this. I watched it happen, too. I watched it to my communities, and we talked about that. But we had people undercutting the right to collectively bargain. We had right to work states made it more difficult. We had companies that were willing to ship it over. And we saw people profit, folks that are venture capital in some cases, putting money into companies that were overseas. We're in agreement that we bring those home. The issue is Donald Trump is talking about it. Kamala Harris has a record, 250,000 more manufacturing jobs just in out of the IRA.
May I respond to that?
Yes.
So appreciate that. So if you notice, what Governor Walz just did is he said, first of all, Donald Trump has to listen to the experts. And then when he acknowledged that the experts screwed up, he said, well, Donald Trump didn't do nearly as good of a job as the statistics
show
that he did. So what Tim Walz is doing, and I honestly, Tim, I think you got a tough job here, because you've got to play whack-a-mole. You've got to pretend that Donald Trump didn't deliver rising take-home pay, which of course he did. You've got to pretend that Donald Trump didn't deliver lower inflation, which of course he did. And then you simultaneously got to defend Kamala Harris's atrocious economic record, which has made gas, groceries, and housing unaffordable for American citizens. I was raised by a woman who would sometimes go into medical debt so that she could put food on the table in our household. I know what it's like to not be able to afford the things that you need to afford. We can do so much better. To all of you watching, we can get back to an America that's affordable again. We just got to get back to common sense economic principles.
I hope we have a conversation on health care then.
Senator, Governor.
Please.
Thank you. Margaret?
We have a lot to get to ahead, gentlemen, on many topics. But right now, I want to talk about personal qualifications. The vice president is often the last voice the president hears before making consequential decisions. We want to ask you about your leadership qualities. Governor Walz, you said you were in Hong Kong during the deadly Tiananmen Square protests in the spring of 1989. But Minnesota Public Radio and other media outlets are reporting that you actually didn't travel to Asia until August of that year. Can you explain that discrepancy?
Yeah, well, and to the folks out there who didn't get at the top of this, look, I grew up in small rural Nebraska, town of 400, town that you rode your bike with your buddies till the streetlights come on, and I'm proud of that service. I joined the National Guard at 17, worked on family farms, and then I used the GI Bill to become a teacher, passionate about it, a young teacher. My first year out, I got the opportunity in the summer of 89 to travel to China, 35 years ago, be able to do that. I came back home and then started a program to take young people there. We would take basketball teams, we would take baseball teams, we would take dancers, and we would go back and forth to China. The issue for that was to try and learn. Now, look, my community knows who I am. They saw where I was at. I will be the first to tell you, I have poured my heart into my community. I've tried to do the best I can, but I've not been perfect, and I'm a knucklehead at times, but it's always been about that. Those same people elected me to Congress for 12 years. And in Congress, I was one of the most bipartisan people, working on things like farm bills that we got done, working on veterans benefits. And then the people of Minnesota were able to elect me to governor twice. So look, my commitment has been from the beginning to make sure that I'm there for the people, to make sure that I get this right. I will say more than anything, many times I will talk a lot. I will get caught up in the rhetoric. But being there, the impact it made, the difference it made in my life, I learned a lot about China. I hear the critiques of this. I would make the case that Donald Trump should have come on one of those trips with us. I guarantee you he wouldn't be praising Xi Jinping about COVID. And I guarantee you he wouldn't start a trade war that he ends up losing. So this is about trying to understand the world. It's about trying to do the best you can for your community. And then it's putting yourself out there and letting your folks understand what it is. My commitment, whether it be through teaching, which I was good at, or whether it was being a good soldier or was being a good member of Congress, those are the things that I think are the values that people care about.
Governor, just to follow up on that, the question was, can you explain the discrepancy?
Just, all I said on this was, is I got there that summer and misspoke on this. So I will just, that's what I've said. So I was in Hong Kong and China during the democracy protests, went in. And from that, I learned a lot of what needed to be in governance.
Thank you, Governor. Senator Vance, in 2016, you called your running mate Donald Trump unfit for the nation's highest office, and you said he could be America's Hitler. I know you've said, you've been asked many times, and you've said you regret those comments and explained you then voted for Donald Trump in 2020. But the Washington Post reported new messages last week in which you also disparaged Trump's economic record while he was president, writing to someone in 2020, quote, Trump thoroughly failed to deliver his economic populism. You're now his running mate, and you're vice president. Why should Americans trust that you will give Donald Trump the advice he needs to hear and not just the advice he wants to hear? You have 2 minutes.
Well, first of all, Margaret, because I've always been open. And sometimes, of course, I've disagreed with the president, but I've also been extremely open about the fact that I was wrong about Donald Trump. I was wrong, first of all, because I believed some of the media stories that turned out to be dishonest fabrications of his record. But most importantly, Donald Trump delivered for the American people. Rising wages, rising take-home pay, an economy that worked for normal Americans, a secure southern border, a lot of things, frankly, that I didn't think he'd be able to deliver on. And yeah, when you screw up, when you misspeak, when you get something wrong and you change your mind, you ought to be honest with the American people about it. It's one of the reasons, Margaret, why I've done so many interviews is because I think it's important to actually explain to the American people where I come down on the issues and what changed. Now, you pointed out the messages from 2020. Margaret, I've been extremely consistent that I think there were a lot of things that we could have done better in the Trump administration the first round if Congress was doing its job. I strongly believe, and I've been a United States senator, that Congress is not just a high-class debating society. It's not just a forum for senators and congressmen to whine about problems. It's a forum to govern. So there were a lot of things on the border, on tariffs, for example, where I think that we could have done so much more if the Republican Congress and the Democrats in Congress had been a little bit better about how they govern the country. They were so obsessed with impeaching Donald Trump, they couldn't actually govern. And I want to talk about this tariff issue in particular. Margaret, because you know, Tim just accused this of being a national sales tax. Look, the one thing, and you're probably surprised to hear me praising Joe Biden, but the one thing that Joe Biden did is he continued some of the Trump tariffs that protected American manufacturing jobs. And it's the one issue, the most pro-worker part of the Biden administration, it's the one issue where Kamala Harris has run away from Joe Biden's record. Think about this. If you're trying to employ slave laborers in China at $3 a day, you're going to do that and undercut the wages of American workers unless our country stands up for itself and says, you're not accessing our markets unless you're paying middle-class Americans a fair wage.
Senator, your time is up. Nora?
Thank you. Now to the issue of reproductive rights. Governor Walz, after Roe versus Wade was overturned, you signed a bill into law that made Minnesota one of the least restrictive states in the nation when it comes to abortion. Former President Trump said in the last debate that you believe abortion, quote, in the ninth month is absolutely fine. Yes or no? Is that what you support? I'll give you 2 minutes.
That's not what the bill says. But look, this issue is what's on everyone's mind. Donald Trump put this all into motion. He brags about how great it was that he put the judges in and overturned Roe versus Wade, 52 years of personal autonomy. And then he tells us, oh, we send it to the states. It's a beautiful thing. Amanda Zaworski would disagree with you on It's a Beautiful Thing. A young bride in Texas waiting for their child at 18 weeks. She has a complication, a tear in the membrane. She needs to go in. The medical care at that point needs to be decided by the doctor. And that would have been an abortion. But in Texas, that would have put them in legal jeopardy. She went home, got sepsis, nearly dies, and now she may have difficulty having children. Or in Kentucky, Hadley Duvall, a 12-year-old child raped and impregnated by her stepfather. Those are horrific. Now, when God asked about that, Senator Vance said, two wrongs don't make a right. There is no right in this. So in Minnesota, what we did was restore Roe versus Wade. We made sure that we put women in charge of their health care. But look, this is not where, if you don't know Amanda or a Hadley, you soon will. Their Project 2025 is going to have a registry of pregnancies. It's going to make it more difficult, if not impossible, to get contraception and limit access, if not eliminate access to infertility treatments. For so many of you out there listening, me included, infertility treatments are why I have a child. That's nobody else's business, but those things are being proposed. And the catch-all on this is, well, the states will decide what's right for Texas might not be right for Washington. That's not how this works. This is basic human right. We have seen maternal mortality skyrocket in Texas, outpacing many other countries in the world. This is about health care. In Minnesota, we are ranked first in health care for a reason. We trust women. We trust doctors.
Senator, do you want to respond to the governor's claim? Will you create a federal pregnancy monitoring agency?
No, Nora, certainly we won't. And I want to talk about this issue because I know a lot of Americans care about it, and I know a lot of Americans don't agree with everything that I've ever said on this topic. And, you know, I grew up in a working-class family in a neighborhood where I knew a lot of young women who had unplanned pregnancies and decided to terminate those pregnancies because they feel like they didn't have any other options. And, you know, I one of them is actually very dear to me. And I know she's watching tonight, and I love you. And she told me something a couple years ago that she felt like if she hadn't had that abortion, that it would have destroyed her life because she was in an abusive relationship. And I think that what I take from that as a Republican who proudly wants to protect innocent life in this country, who proudly wants to protect the vulnerable, is that my party, we've got to do so much better of a job at earning the American people's trust back on this issue where they frankly just don't trust us. And I think that's one of the things that Donald Trump and I are endeavoring to do. I want us as a Republican Party to be pro-family in the fullest sense of the word. I want us to support fertility treatments. I want us to make it easier for moms to afford to have babies. I want it to make it easier for young families to afford a home so they can afford a place to raise that family. And I think there's so much that we can do on the public policy front just to give women more options. Now, of course, Donald Trump has been very clear that on the abortion policy specifically, that we have a big country and it's diverse. And California has a different viewpoint on this than Georgia. Georgia has a different viewpoint from Arizona. And the proper way to handle this, as messy as democracy sometimes is to let voters make these decisions, let the individual states make their abortion policy. And I think that's what makes the most sense in a very big, a very diverse, and let's be honest, sometimes a very, very messy and divided country.
Governor, would you like to respond and also answer the question about restrictions?
Yeah, well, the question got asked and Donald Trump made the accusation that wasn't true about Minnesota. Well, let me tell you about this idea that there's diverse states. There's a young woman named Amber Thurman. She happened to be in Georgia, a restrictive state. Because of that, she had to travel a long distance to North Carolina to try and get her care. Amber Thurman died in that journey back and forth. The fact of the matter is, how can we as a nation say that your life and your rights, as basic as the right to control your own body, is determined on geography? There's a very real chance had Amber Thurman lived in Minnesota, she would be alive today. That's why the restoration of Roe versus Wade. When you listen to Vice President Harris talk about this subject and you hear me talk about it, you hear us talking exactly the same. Donald Trump is trying to figure out how to get the political right of this. I agree with a lot of what Senator Vance said about what's happening. His running mate, though, does not, and that's the problem.
Governor, your time is up. Senator, let me ask you about that. He mentioned, it was, I think, referring to a national ban. In the past, you have supported a federal ban on abortion after 15 weeks. In fact, you said if someone can't support legislation like that, quote, you are making the United States the most barbaric pro-abortion regime anywhere in the entire world. My question is, why have you changed your position?
Well, Nora, first of all, I never supported a national ban. I did, during when I was running for Senate in 2022, talk about setting some minimum national standard. For example, we have a partial birth abortion ban in place in this country at the federal level. I don't think anybody's trying to get rid of that, or at least I hope not, though I know that Democrats have taken a very radical pro-abortion stance. But, Nora, you know, one of the things that changed is in the state of Ohio, we had a referendum in 2023, and the people of Ohio voted overwhelmingly, by the way, against my position. And I think that what I learned from that, Nora, is that we've got to do a better job at winning back people's trust. So many young women would love to have families. So many young women also see an unplanned pregnancy as something that's going to destroy their livelihood, destroy their education, destroy their relationships. And we have got to earn people's trust back. And that's why Donald Trump and I are committed to pursuing pro-family policies, making child care more accessible, making fertility treatments more accessible, because we've got to do a better job at that. And that's what real leaders is.
Governor, your response.
Well, I'm going to respond on the pro-abortion piece of that. No, we're not. We're pro-women. We're pro-freedom to make your own choice. We know what the implications are to not be that. Women having miscarriages, women not getting the care, physicians feeling like they may be prosecuted for providing that care. And as far as making sure that we're educating our children and giving them options, Minnesota's a state with one of the lowest teen pregnancy rates. We understand that, too. We know that the options need to be available, and we make that true. We also make it, we're a top three state for the best place to raise children. But these two things, to try and say that we're pro-children, but we don't like this, or you guys are pro-abortion, that's not the case at all. We are pro-freedoms for women to make their choices, and we're going, and Kamala Harris is making the case, to make options for children more affordable, a $6,000 child tax credit, but we're not going to base that on the backs of making someone like Amber Thurman drive 600 miles to try and get health care.
Senator.
I may respond to that. First of all, Governor, I agree with you. Amber Thurman should still be alive, and there are a lot of people who should still be alive, and I certainly wish that she was. And maybe you're free to disagree with me on this and explain this to me, but as I read the Minnesota law that you signed into law, the statute that you signed into law, it says that a doctor who presides over an abortion where the baby survives, the doctor is under no obligation to provide life-saving care to a baby who survives a botched late-term abortion. That is, I think,
that's
whether you're
true.
Pro-choice or pro-abortion, that is fundamentally barbaric. And that's why I use that word, Nora, is because some of what we've seen, do you want to force Catholic hospitals to perform abortions against their will? Because Kamala Harris is supported suing Catholic nuns to violate their freedom of conscience. We can be a big and diverse country where we're respect people's freedom of conscience and make the country more pro-baby and pro-family. But please.
Yes, Governor, please respond.
Look, this is one where there's always something there. This is a very simple proposition. These are women's decisions to make about their health care decisions, and the physicians who know best was written to try and make a point. That's not it
but
at all.
What was I wrong this about, were, Governor? Please tell me. What was
that
I wrong about?
That is not the way the law is written. Look, I've given
but
this.
But how?
I've given this advice on a lot of things, that getting involved, getting engaged. That's been misread. It was fact-checked at the last debate. But the point on this is there's a continuation of these guys to try and tell women or to get involved. I use this line on this. Just mind your own business on this. Things work best when Roe versus Wade was in place. When we do a restoration of Roe, that works best. That doesn't preclude us from increasing funding for children. It doesn't increase us from making sure that once that child's born, like in Minnesota, they get meals, they get early childhood education, they get health care. So the hiding behind we're going to do all these other things when you're not proposing them in your budget, Kamala Harris is proposing them. She's proposing all those things to make life easier for families.
I asked a specific question, Governor. You gave me a slogan as a response.
It's not the case. It's not true. That's not what the law says. So they fact-checked it with President Trump.
Gentlemen, there's a lot to discuss. We have to move on, and we're going to be right back with much more of the CBS News vice presidential debate in just a moment.
افغانستان کې د روان وضعیت خبری پوښښ د پیښو لزاینو څخه په مستقیمه بڼه د امریکا غاک خبريالان مو د واشنگتن له استوديو غان
سلامونه ستړي مشي
زه خایسته سعادت لامیم
زه احمد شکیبیم
زه ګالیا رانا نورستانیم
زه احسان لاریب زم
سیمه او نړۍ په ورستې او حالاتو خبروي او د تاسې مسایلو جزئیات وړاندې کوي چې د افغانانو پر ژوندانه باندې اغیز لري
په امریکا کې ټاکنې او په کانګرس کې د کورنیو او نړیوالو مسایلو په اړه د مهمو پریکړو حال
په سپین ماڼۍ کې زموږ خبريالان د امریکا د ولسمشر د غونډو سفرونو او مهمو پریکړو په اړه وروستۍ حال درکوي
د امریکا د بهرنیو چارو له وزارت څخه مو په نړیوالو چارو کې د وروستۍ پرمختګونو او د واشنگتن د دریځ په اړه خبرو
په دفاعي چارو کې د امریکا د پریکړو او پوځي خوځښتونو په اړه لا پینټاګان نه راپورونه
د دې درڅنګ د ژوند په امریکا کې د خبرونو لړۍ د امریکایانو د ژوند کلتوري ټولنیز او اقتصادي اړخونه انځوروي او په امریکا کې د افغانانو د ژوند لړۍ او ژورې درخایي
د افغانستان په ګاونډي هیوادونو اروپا او نورې نړۍ کې د افغان کډوالو حال
امریکا غږ د کرا او هر اړخیزو خبرونو د سرچینې په توګه روحه خو د مسایلو د ټولو اړخونو درونتیا هڅه کوي د حکومتي چارواکو ډیپلوماټانو او شنونکو سره د تودو بحثونو برسره اهم افغانانو ته د نظر سرګندولو موقع برابروي
امریکا غږ په افغانستان کې د بیان د ازادۍ د مخخ منبع په توګه په هر اړخیزو او به طرف رادیوي خبرونو کې له چارواکو نه پوښتنه کوي
برخنا تحریک
زبی الله غازی
مسکا صاحبای
خدای نور ناصر امریکا ژغ اسلام آباد
پیخبر
کولمبیا میزوری
کالیفورنیا لس انجلس
د امریکا غاک ټلویزیونی خبرونه پر سپوږمکۍ او ټولنیزو رسنو باندې مهیره وی
د بیان ازادي مهمه ده او امریکا ژغ ورته ژمن دی
هایل کاوشگری و ژرف‌نگری رویدادهای داغ روز در افغانستان زیر سلطه طالبان بارانات موجود در افغانستان چگونگی رویدادها تقابل دیدگاه‌ها بحث و مناظره در مورد راه حل مشکلات و بن‌بست‌های موجود در آن کشور از زبان کارشناسان تحلیلگران و مسئولان هایل هر جمعه شب ساعت 7:30 با وقت افغانستان از شبکه ماهواره‌ای و نشرات دیجیتالی صدای امریکا
سپین خبری د مهمو خبرونو او ورځنیو مسایلو په اړه د کارپوهانو او صاحب نظرو څېړونکو تاوده بحثونه هر ماښام د شپې د اتو نه تر نهو بجو پورې د امریکا غږ آشنا رادیو پښتو او دری مشترک خبرونه تاسو د خبرونه د امریکا غږ د ساتلایت لالارې په ژوندۍ بڼه لیدلی او اوریدلی هم شي
یک موضوع چند زاویه ویژه برنامه جدید صدای امریکا بررسی و تحلیل موضوع داغ هفته از زاویه های مختلف تماشای این برنامه را
Welcome back to the CBS News Vice Presidential Debate. We want to turn now to America's gun violence epidemic. The leading cause of death for children and teens in America is by firearms. Senator Vance, you oppose most gun legislation that Democrats claim would curb gun violence. You oppose red flag gun laws and legislation to ban certain semi-automatic rifles, including AR-15s. So let me ask you, earlier this year, for the first time, the parents of a school shooter were convicted of involuntary manslaughter and sentenced to 10 years in prison. Do you think holding parents responsible could curb mass shootings? I'll give you 2 minutes.
Yeah, well, Nora, on that particular case, I don't know the full details, but I certainly trust local law enforcement and local authorities to make those decisions. I think in some cases the answer is going to be yes, and in some cases the answer is going to be no. And the details really matter here, of course. For example, if a kid steals a gun, that's going to be different than if a parent hands over a gun knowing that their kid is potentially dangerous. But look, I want to just sort of speak as a father of three beautiful little kids, and our oldest is now in second grade. And like a lot of parents, we send our kids to school with such hope and such joy and such pride at their little faces on the first day of school. And we know, unfortunately, that a lot of kids are going to experience this terrible epidemic of gun violence. And of course, our hearts go out to the families that are affected by this terrible stuff. And we do have to do better. And I think that Governor Walz and I